As long as you can see that screen, okay. And I will do full screen when I can.
How's that? Oh, crap.
Too dark. My computer's going through an update, so unfortunately that won't be ready for an hour, I think. So we're going to use yours, and I'm going to be careful with it. But I don't know which one the fire and ice is. I saw something. Is this the one you mean? The fire and ice
one? No, that's it.
That is it.
Why would you not stay in one setting? No.
And now this is suffering. Well, I hope that's okay. All right.
There's no direct nudity in it.
Oh, okay, good.
But there's also no children here, so we don't have to worry.
Okay. Well, once he's got that ready, I actually have a list of some of these that qualify once we get going. Is there a way to get...
Might as well just turn it up.
Yeah, well, as long as the screen is slightly dark around here. Slightly dark. How's that? No, that's too dark.
It's on high or it's on low.
Okay.
Well, put it on high.
Put it on high.
Yeah.
On high or just mostly high, so slightly darkened, if that's possible.
No, because it's been like this. There's something up
okay,
here.
Okay, yeah. In a way, yeah. That's not too bad. You can see. Okay, good. All right. Well, this panel is when live action meets cartoons. And the thing is, there's two different types. There's the type where you have totally live action, then a cartoon, and back and forth. And then, of course, you have mixing one with the other. Now, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Yep, and the same thing is... And, of course, going way back, you had a short called You Ought to Be in Pictures with Porky Pig and Daffy Duck and Leon Schlesinger from Warner Brothers. So that was a really classic one. And they've done various things over the years, TV shows and movies and commercials, where they have the live action and animation mix. One thing I see in a lot is Tony the Tiger. Especially, for several years up until recently, they used to sponsor the Little League World Series, and you'd always see, get out the tiger in you and everything. So they would blend a cartoon Tony with real action. So you would do that. I'm gonna play a clip from 9 to 5. Now the Banana Splits, that was a case where they had the live action, running around in the suits. They had all that bit in the sour grapes, they had that. But then they had the cartoon series as well, like Gulliver and Huck Finn, which we'll get into, and Microventures and different things. So you had those. Now Pee-wee's Playhouse qualifies because there were some cartoons shown during that show. Also, Brian and Stewie from Family Guy were at the Emmys. So they had a thing where they were interacting and doing some stuff. Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, of course you had Bill Cosby live. And then they'd go into the cartoons. Huck Finn, we're going to play a clip from. Now, how about this? The Tracy Ullman Show, one of the first shows on Fox. What are these weird cartoons? The Simpson Family? Whatever happened to them? That's where it came from. They had the Simpson shorts on Tracy Ullman Show. The Wild Kratts, that's another one, where they do live-action animation, maybe or maybe not together. Also, the new Three Stooges. Back in the 60s, you had... Mo, Larry, and I believe Curly Joe Derita were the ones, so they would do intros and everything. And Fetch with Ruff Ruffman, that was where you had some live action and some animation. The clips I've got here, 1, 2, 3, 4, I guess there'll be 5. I don't know, I haven't gotten one from Roger Rabbit yet. This was from 1990. The move, yep.
For a second.
Sure.
Which one is that?
This is 9 to 5.
Oh, okay.
Okay. This was from 1990. Dabney Coleman, Lily Tomlin, Dolly Parton, and Jane Fonda. The movie 9 to 5. And this kind of pokes fun at things like Snow White. Thank you. So yeah, it was 1980. New Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, 1968. Hanna-Barbera, live action and animation mix. The villain was Injun Joe, who was played by Ted Cassidy. So this is a mixture of both.
Don't worry, Becky. No, really not.
Yeah. We just don't know where we are.
Ooh, what an awful looking bird. Let's find a way out of here now.
It's lighter down this way. Let's try it.
Indian puppies.
Wait. What's that? The castle, of course.
Criminy. It's bigger than the old slaughterhouse down by the river.
Well, no point standing around. Can tell us where we are.
Stand up. Beware, there is mortal danger.
Who are you?
I am a troll, but I was once a squire.
Look at that troll.
Jason is my name.
Real squire? Where's your knight?
Dead, like all the other knights. Killed by the evil sorcerer, Zilbad, of the castle. It is said that to spy upon these woods, Zilbad turns into a great black bird.
Okay,
I don't know if we can believe that.
That could be Injun Joe. They always used to say that every episode.
Go, my warriors! Ride! Ride!
Is it what? Why am I thinking the Army of the Dead from Lord of the Rings?
Run! Run for your lives!
Thank you.
Then we'll just have to storm the castle.
Have fun storming the castle. Okay, a couple years before that, they actually did a TV special on Jack and the Beanstalk with Gene Kelly, and they were in the castle, the giant castle, from Pete's Dragon, 73, I want to say, around then. The original one.
I look in your eyes and you whisper sweetly.
Something like a rope or a chain to lift him up, and then they would draw something over it and you would see that. And about 15 years later, they did the same thing with Roger Rabbit. They would have a faucet or something, and you know, he dumps them in the sink, and then all of a sudden, you know, Judge Doom and his henchmen are all gone. Are you okay? And he spits out the water. Well, the water came out of a faucet, but they drew Roger over it. And there actually was a special called Roger Rabbit and the Secrets of Toontown. So it talked about that. Okay, this next one I don't know about.
Actually, let me chew this one.
Sorry. Chew it up.
Yeah. Watch it.
Can you get through?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on.
This one's called Fire and Ice. The reason why I added this was unique with a lot of the cartoons versus live action. This was done by Ralph Bakshi. And Ralph Bakshi was a former Disney animator. He kind of created an animation called rotoscoping, which basically what he did is that he filmed live-action people acting, and then he animated over their silhouettes, which is where they basically got the technology that they use now to make a lot of the CGI, whereas actually this, like for instance, Avengers Endgame was done with a similar one, but they basically do the actor, he acts out the motions, they have sensors put all over his body, and what they do is the CGI animators come in and they animate over the sensors.
and it inputs it into the computer, and then they just work from there.
And Gollum and Lord of the Rings, same thing. The
exactly.
Andy Serkis.
Benedict Cumberbatch, Smaug. He was on all four.
Yep. Smaug was. It was yep. done by Smaug. It was also Cumberbatch. Most of Avatar was done the exact same way, and most of and pretty much this, but this.
Planet of the Apes.
And I want to say
Planet of the Apes is where they perfected it. But here's the funny thing: Planet of the Apes wasn't CGI; they were actually in costume.
Oh.
But they used the same technology to get the facial expressions to show through their makeup, which is different than the original.
You're talking about the new
version. What's that guy's name? The Rise of the Planet of the Apes. That's pure CGI.
Yes,
I'm talking about the one done by
guy
who did Batman.
Tim Burton.
Yes, the Tim version.
Yeah.
That
Tim
was the actual suits.
Yes.
But the most recent one that was actually done in the same CGI.
That's what I meant.
He mentioned Gollum, so he mentioned the same thing. The same actor.
I think they used rotoscoping in Gulliver's Travels in the 30s, and you know he'd be singing or he'd be talking, and they did the same sort of thing. That was back in the 30s. Even before then.
And apart from Hogan, just had the guy in the motion capture.
Well, the interesting thing about this one is by using the level of rotoscoping, they actually got like the physical body movements correct.
Yeah, the most famous thing Ralph Bakshi's known for is probably the Lord of the Rings.
The exact same technology. He did this actually after he did Lord of the Rings. Like, this was about 6 years after he did Lord of the Rings.
He's on the far side of the big tree. You go get her out, and I'll distract the others.
There must be 50 of them.
That sounds about right.
Like, this was basically done with a combination of Ralph Bakshi and Frank Frazetta.
Is that Caveman Batman?
Actually, yes, it's the Wolf God. This was done about 2 years before for the Reverend story.
And it's whatever you see
first.
This is what comes first.
Let's just kill it.
Where's the girl?
I couldn't find her.
So why is it called Fire and Ice?
Answer your question. The reason why this is called Fire and Ice, the basic premise of the movie: there's a sorcerer. Him and his mother control the Ice Age, the region of ice, and all of the what they call the subhumans. And they decided to take over the world by spreading the ice from the north across to the south. And they were opposed by a king whose castle is built into a volcano, and that's where the fire comes from. But this was probably one of Ralph Bakshi's best animations. It is kind of what put him on the map.
Because
it says 1983.
Yeah, because he did Lord of the Rings about in like 78, 79.
This definitely produced, looks better.
And he did this in 83. But then after that is when he started his run of the Disney-esque animated films, such as like The Secret of Nim and Rockabilly and All Gods Go to Heaven. And then he finally hit the pinnacle when he helped Steven Spielberg do An American Tale.
Are you talking Bakshi or Don Bluth?
Batu.
Yeah, Don Bluth is the guy behind those.
Yeah, but
so I was thinking of Bluth with the other ones.
Bashy went in a different direction because he helped with the animation of that.
Oh, Don okay, Bluth. Right.
Bashy went that way
right.
with Rock and Roll, American Pop, and what was the other one he did?
Cool World was right after
Cool World.
Was right after Rocky. I'm sorry, Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, so that's the direction he went. Like Ralph Bashy went adult because originally Ralph Bashy what kind of got him fired from Disney is when he did. What was that one that he did back
Is it Mighty Mouse sniffing the... No.
No. Well, that's part of it. But he did the... what is it called? Huh?
Fritz the Cat.
Fritz the Cat.
Yeah, Fritz.
I was going to mention Fritz the Cat. That's back in the 70s. Yeah. It's like
that's
one
what
of
started
first
that.
Adult animations.
He did Fritz the Cat, then he did
Wizards.
The Wizards.
Yeah.
And, like, Wizards is what made him... what gave him the whole thing to do the license to Fire and Ice. I mean,
Lord of the Rings.
Lord of the Rings.
It's at 11 past 2.
I'll cut it there. But anyway, this one's going to be kind of a short anime. I mean, a short panel, mainly because we kind of want everyone to go to the closing ceremonies and give your feedback.
Mm-hmm.
So
is that 3:00?
It's 2:30. So
it's going to be 2:30 now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, they changed the schedule.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, not 2:30. Wait a minute. Oh, it's only 2:11.
It's 2:11.
The schedule says 3:15.
It says 3:15, or did that move? 3:15 for closing, it says.
Oh, no, we still got time. Shoot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to double check, see if they changed the schedule.
No, because I'm the one that made the schedule.
Oh, okay.
I thought maybe they combined these two panels.
I remember seeing when I came in,
closing
and that some things had been moved around.
Right.
But.
Well, yeah, we flipped that one mainly because Buzz Dixon wanted to do the reading, and we couldn't get two of the people who did the reading till today. So we flipped them.
Mm.
But anyway, kind of before we go into any more clips, I kind of want to open it up to anybody who has any comments and stuff.
Well, I mentioned the commercials. I mean, there are so many over the years that would have a live-action animation mix, drawing the character in, you know. And they had some. There was one recently where they had characters like Underdog, you know, from MasterCard or something. You know, at the very end, you'd see Underdog, and they had Superman. And then there was another one that had, like, the Peanuts characters. They would draw them in, you know, different commercials. Over the years. Lots of Tony the Tiger, as I mentioned.
I remember that's my show. Oh, wait a minute. What's my favorite?
The very old Frosted Flakes, the black
Rocky and Bullwinkle movie. I remember that just when they, because they.
I was going to mention that one.
The Roger Rabbit movie.
I was going to mention that because I'm like, because I noticed Rocky and Bullwinkle were the only ones animated in the entire movie. Mm-hmm. And everybody else was live action.
Yeah, but I remember, like, one of the things that I remember just amusing me in that movie is when they mentioned the Roger Rabbit movie in that movie.
Looney Tunes back in action.
Looney Tunes back in action. And Space
Jam.
Space Jam
is the big one.
Yeah.
Well, the
thing is, there were a lot of commercials with those characters.
Space Jam's like the reverse, though.
Like Hair Jordan and Air Jordan. Remember that one? Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny.
They're actually making a sequel right now.
Yeah.
Of course they are.
Yeah, of course they are. But yeah, Space Jam is kind of like the opposite almost, because there's only a live action person in an animated world instead of animated characters in a live action world.
Well, part of the issue is I feel like CGI kind of ruined it in certain ways where basically some people can't tell the difference. Because out of all of the live action rotoscoping and stuff like that, I feel like Who Framed Roger Rabbit was kind of the pinnacle. Because that's the first time literally actors were like, Roger Rabbit wasn't there. There was like literally an X sitting on a pot of stick where you're sitting there talking.
Yeah, they had a dummy.
You know, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The guy who voiced him even dressed up as Roger.
But he mentioned the stunts that they used.
Yeah.
And that was new. Which
was something like you know, he puts his paw or whatever, his hand on the chair of Eddie Valiant's, you know, brother's thing. And you see the prints. You know, don't touch that. It doesn't. You see the prints.
Exactly.
So they had industrial light and magic do that. They had shadows put in and things like that, so they could create the illusion. And of course, at one point in the movie, Eddie Valiant enters Toontown. So it's the opposite.
Oh yeah, that was the best.
So he winds up there. And
I think one of the best scenes they did of that is when the big cartoon monkey comes and throws him out of the club.
Wise ass!
You know, and he's just coming. He's like, "Who do you think you're going, chump?" And you see literally
who
him floating in the air. And you see him go throwing out. Yes. And it's like there's like a whole lot of like.
I hear the dude lost.
Well, yeah,
the
behind the scenes, you know, they throw him onto a mattress, and they have that. They have, you know, some sort of a thing to throw him on the mattress. And then they do the gorilla.
That's right. He did.
Yeah, they said
institutionalized.
He lost his mind doing that movie, having so many conversations and things that weren't there.
said he was like starting to see things or something.
Well, basically, there's a lot of a lot of the ones where they were doing that, it was like it's very difficult to program your mind to do certain things, and they got to get deprogrammed. Like I've heard multiple times with some of the actors I've done security with that they had to get counseling to get out of the character. Because like imagine like you got to play like a cold-hearted killer, but you got to play a cold-hearted killer for 3.5 months while they're filming. Like to me personally, I feel like playing the Joker is what killed Heath Ledger.
Yeah, I've heard that too. I mean,
just talking about that, I just want to make sure there's no kids here.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I play Santa for 6 weeks, six mm-hmm. days a week for the entire season.
Mm-hmm.
Come Christmas Eve, I get majorly depressed because I do not get to take that flight.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because I've been talking it up for 6 weeks. Oh, it's true.
Wow.
Now,
drive home on Christmas Eve is always so depressing. It's like, I've been talking this up for so long, and I don't get to do the final, you know? Well, so I understand it completely, what you're
exactly,
saying.
Yeah, exactly, you know. Yeah, because people ask me all the time, it was just like, you know, you seem like a nice guy. How can you be a bodyguard? I was like, you know how it is like to suck all the persona out of you, and all of a sudden, like, 1 second, I'm a nice, cool, nerdy guy. And next thing you know, I look like I'm going to beat the crap out of you. And it's just like, it's a matter of I got to summon that dark side and just stand there just like, you can't come in here. Oh, but I can't. But like, nope, don't care. Can't come in here. And it's just like sometimes it sticks with you. Like, I did law enforcement for 22 years. One of the biggest things they taught us is to not bring that stuff home. Because I'm just like, when you have an 8 to 10 to 12 hour job and you literally have to deal with the worst of humanity all day, and you come home and you're just like, damn, people suck. just like, and it's not even a matter of like, people suck because they suck, but I'm just like, you start off your shift with like domestic violence, you know, and it just go, it doesn't go any better from there. But anyway, getting back to the cartoon. But one way, a lot of times when they did a lot of the cartoons versus live action, is to get out of budgetary concerns, because basically, fully animated shows take 6 times as long and become twice as expensive as just filming.
The other way.
Like, I could film a film, a full 4-hour film, in 3 months. This includes post-production and everything else.
Yeah.
Whereas a fully animated feature could take 3 years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's why Disney's making a buck with these live-action remakes.
Not exactly.
Oh,
CGI.
Disney's doing it on purpose because the statute of limitations on their copyrights is up.
Oh, they want to keep from going public domain.
Exactly. Because basically all of their movies are all fairy tales, so a lot of them are in public domain anyways. So that's why you notice, like, when you were a kid, you might have seen Snow White in the movie theaters, and then it disappeared for 5 years. And then all of a sudden it came on a VHS, they let people buy it for a while, and then it disappeared for another 5 years. Yeah, they claim they throw it back into the ball. That's the, we own it, we sit on it, and we don't have to do anything on it. But like, because of the original copyrights, a lot of people didn't realize a lot of their properties would last this long. So they got 5-year copyrights, or 10-year copyrights, or 20-year copyrights. Most of Disney's were like 50-year copyrights. And as of like 2020, most of those copyrights are up.
Is it Mickey up in like 2024?
They have Mickey to like 3,000.
Yeah,
it was like literally like the Earth could get hit with a meteor and aliens can't, you know, can't copyright it.
Yeah, sure.
But most of the, like I said, the reason how they got around a lot of their stuff, 80% of their feature length films are public domain fairy tales, but I can make a movie about Snow White anytime I want to. I can't make that movie.
Hercules is another one, because it was based off of Greek mythology, which is even older than all of them.
Exactly. It was like, some of them like are really old. It was like,
there's been a lot of Hercules movies, but nothing quite like Disney's Hercules.
Mainly because, like I said, if they make it average or something. That's why you notice all of their live-action remakes are almost shot-for-shot, word-for-word, almost exactly like the animated. So they could keep the license.
The Sleeping Beauty one was really different.
The Jungle Book was a bit different too, which I liked. The thing with these live action ones, it's just like, why am I watching the same movie?
Hey, so Jungle Book, that's that. Should that count as something like that? Because I mean, technically, it was a human boy with CG
Everything
animated animals.
CGI.
That's kind of a gray area. Although technically, it would count as animation versus real life.
Because it's just the same thing as Space Jam.
The only thing that was real was the kid.
Yeah,
the kid was the only
thing.
But
then going way back, Song of the South.
Oh, there
you
go.
Live action animation mix.
Mary Poppins.
I know, we don't talk
about that.
That song, Zippity Doodah, where did that come from? Some old movie, we don't know.
Oh, no, they're really embarrassed about that. Like, I actually talked to a Disney exec one time, and he was just like, we don't talk about that.
Yeah.
Don't talk about what?
Song of the South.
And the characters are at Splash Mountain.
And you can't find it anywhere.
And every, like,
I got a copy from England. I have a DVD of it.
I had a bootleg on VHS I got from a comic book, the same guy I was talking about before from the comic book convention. Like, he had them.
I mean, I know how bad it is that way, but I'd still love to see the animation style
and
the show itself.
And have someone on there to talk about, like, well, this is
kind this is
of
what I kind of out. This is what I kind of feel about it
Can
as a black man. It's history.
Yes.
We need to know it.
Right.
Yeah.
And the main reason why we need to know it is because we know what not to do.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And that's the
yes.
reason why a lot of things are perpetuated in America, because we get embarrassed by something, we try to cover it up like it never happened.
Right.
Like, I kind of want to see Bugs Bunny and Fred Flintstone smoking.
Yeah.
Not because I think the kid's going to smoke, but it was just like, this is
the
crap we used to have.
Right.
And it was just like, this is why everybody smoked. They thought it was cool. Fred Flintstone smokes, why can't I smoke? And it was like, why? Because people die, you die from it. You know, so, you know, plain and simple, it was like, there's the all end all of it. So it's the same thing. It was just like, Disney tried to make a nice, fun, happy, family-friendly movie about slavery.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
did it take place during Reconstruction, though?
Uncle Remus was a slave.
No, but he was a slave.
And the whole premise of the movie is that his slave family told him he's now free after the Civil War.
Yeah.
We're no longer keeping him as a slave. And he was sad about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Well, I haven't read the Joel Chandler Harris story,
so I've only seen
the movie. So
but
I
that wasn't
know.
The worst part about it. The worst part about it was the animated thing when he was telling the story about Briar Rabbit. Is that
that's something that says restarted?
No, it's the same
eating.
Thing you're doing. I just
yeah, I
keep
and
saying postpone.
I thought you said 4 hours.
Hmm?
I thought you said postpone for 4 hours.
No, this is his computer.
Yeah,
oh,
his computer.
Okay.
Yeah,
no, it does. It's supposed to reset every 4 hours, but it's like, hey, dude, you really need to reset your computer.
I'm up to 12%. I mean, this is going to take forever on mine. That's why I'm using this. Decided to take this one.
Because, like, I can do it at any time, but it, like, it takes like up.
So Mary Poppins, another
Mary Poppins is another one.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
An even better one.
Yep.
Where they use both animation and stop motion was Bedknobs and Broomsticks.
Yeah,
yes.
That's definitely mentioned.
Yes.
Yeah, Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Like, that's a perfect example of Disney.
Love that
movie.
Getting back to Mary Poppins, there's like an animated fox in that scene.
Yes.
There was a song. Days by Kirsty MacColl, this British artist, and in the video they kind of used the same fox or a similar fox, so it kind of refers back to it was a cover version of a Kinks song. But like I say, in the video they have an animated fox just like the one in Mary Poppins, or at least you can tell where the influence was.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, some of these things you can see. But again, TV commercials, music videos. One of the ones I played the other day was Opposites Attract by Paula Abdul and MC Scat.
Yes,
that's a perfect example.
The guy who did that animation was my graphic design teacher.
Very good. That's great. That was 89 or 90 or somewhere around there.
I actually
it was just after Roger Rabbit.
Looking up Gloria Estefan's Sound Machine.
Miami Sound Machine
with Bad Boys, because I thought that was animated too, but it wasn't. It was all makeup.
Oh, okay.
Was that the cat one
that I was just showing
you,
yeah. Because you reminded me of that one.
Right.
Wow.
It was like, I thought Gloria Estefan did one too, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that video in so long.
80s.
No, I'm a big Gloria Estefan. She was just in town with a. She had like a Broadway play.
Oh wow! Okay.
And like she was in Boston for about 3 months.
Wow.
And it was like, that's what popped it in my head. I just realized I ain't listened to that song since like last year.
Disney does do a lot of the intermingling with animation, though.
They did a lot
movies.
Of it in the late 60s.
They did it in the new one.
How about Tron?
Returns.
Right.
Yeah.
How about Tron?
Tron was the first CGI movie.
Computer generated, yeah.
I thought it was on the Toy Story that was first CGI.
Toy Story was the first fully CGI'd animated film. Tron was the first computer generated film with live people in it.
Oh, okay.
Like, it was a film, but like every time they did the computer world, that was the first rotoscoping that they did, but they did it with a computer. So it's kind of like, basically, it was the first CGI. Like, because like CGI wasn't a thing, and it didn't really become a thing until Lucas took what they did at Disney and Tron and kind of ran with it. And like, that's the kind of stuff he did with Industrial Light and Magic. It was so well blended when they started doing CGI for TV. In Deep Space Nine and Star Trek Voyager, they switched out the live models for CGI ships. Nobody noticed.
Okay.
And this was like literally like first Voyager was the first season, they had an actual Voyager model. And then they stopped.
Yeah.
And the only time they animated it is like when you see the engines go up and above, we're about to go to warp, that was CGI. And then they slowly replaced it with a CGI model. And everything after season two was all CGI ships.
I was wondering why the Christie's auction, where they had all the different props and stuff, didn't have very much from those shows. Compared to Next Generation.
Like, Next Generation was mostly Industrial Light and Magic. Like, basically, they did most of the CGI. Which is funny, they do the same thing with Orville.
I wanted to point out I thought of this one. This was a series pilot with William Shaller that Friz Freleng did called Filbert. So you had an animated character interacting with some real live people. And then there were a series of kind of religious type videos called McGee and Me that would have this kid and he would draw this character that came to life, this little McGee type thing. So you would have that as well.
It was Jerry.
I was going to say.
It was Jerry dancing with Gene Kelly.
Yep, Anchors Away. You had that.
And they parodied it on Family Guy and had Stewie dancing with him.
Yeah. Matter of fact, let me pull that one up. That just popped in my head because I thought that was ingenious for the time.
Yeah, and like I mentioned, at one point during the Emmy Awards, they had Brian and Stewie come out and like talk about different things, and they made it look like they were in on the stage.
One of the Simpsons Treehouse of Horrors where entered the real world.
Right. It was mentioned also different things like in SpongeBob SquarePants.
If we want to get to Aspen, we're going to have to get over those mountains somehow. Excuse me, how much is it to rent a helicopter?
It's $10 an hour, but there's a $100,000 deposit.
Oh, God. Looks like we're walking.
Wait a minute. It says here you accept cash, check, or a jaunty tune.
Well, this rental agreement was drafted back when musicals were culturally relevant. Unfortunately, that's no longer the case.
Well, I can prove to you that's a whole lot of nonsense. You may think that song and dance is dated, boring, and dry, but you might just learn to like it if you give it a try. You could laugh and sing and dance as gaily as an elf, but just in case you don't believe me, ask the man himself. Mr. Kelly, will you show us?
Yeah. I'll show you.
Let's do it.
Go on. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. La 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 la. La 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 la. You see?
It's easy.
Thank you.
is that like an MGM movie? They probably had to get the rights and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
What amazed me on that is I was watching The Shadow of Stewie.
Yeah.
And they took out Jerry's shadow and actually added Stewie's shadow on the reflection.
There are ways to do it. Some of the things that are going on now, they're de-aging people in movies. Like in Guardians of the Galaxy, they had Kurt Russell, and they made him look a lot younger.
Okay.
And the movie that's coming out with De Niro and Pacino and Pesci about Jimmy Hoffa, it's called The Irishman, they're going to make them look younger.
Oh,
so there's all this technology out there.
Best one I've seen is Tron Legacy, where they had
Jeff
Bridges as a young person, the way he looked in the original Tron, and as he looked now.
Wow.
And
again,
he was playing himself.
Was it Jeff Bridges or was Kurt Russell? I'm thinking, that's what I said.
I was right,
it was Kurt Russell. Okay, but you're right, Jeff Bridges.
Also, in the Captain Marvel movie,
they did that the same thing to Sam Jackson.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Where they de-aged him to look like he was when he was in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then getting back to like some of these cartoons, SpongeBob SquarePants, they wind up like not in the ocean, but up in the real world.
Yeah,
so you had like a starfish, you had a sponge,
and
you had like a toy squirrel.
Yeah. Here's the funny thing. The funny thing, that was in real life. They made a giant David Hasselhoff body and just animated on top of it. Hold on.
But again, like the whole thing with Roger Rabbit being in shadows and doing all these things and having them physically react to the characters. Eddie Valiant is pulling Roger Rabbit, and you know, if you can see the pants, and he's going like this. Get out of there!
Yeah. Well, thanks to...
Are you telling me you could have gotten out of those handcuffs at any time? No, not at any time. Only when it was funny. Yeah, you're better at than I am.
Yeah, thanks to that Monopoly game, I have this movie now.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen it, but...
Oh, this is hilarious. I love this movie.
Don't wake him up.
Let's stop the game.
There you go.
Now
that's the dummy right.
Boop.
That's so funny. Uh-oh. They fell off, didn't they? No, they're still there.
No, there was a whole thing about the guy sent it. Watch the movie. I'm not going to say
it.
Did you see that?
All hands on deck. You done good, Hasselhoff. You done.
Oh, jeez.
Ow.
I just thought of another one that had both live action and animation. The Lego Movie, when they talk about the man upstairs and everything, and they show like the father and son and everything like that with the Lego Village. So you had live action animation.
Kind of thing is, that whole movie was live action animation.
Yeah,
but it was mostly stop motion.
Oh right, it was stop motion. Yeah.
I don't remember how much. Yeah, a lot of it was CGI, but there might have been some like it's
when the Lego people were moving in the real world.
That was
stop motion. Thing.
Because they will just make it, computers make the Legos look exactly like the real thing, to break down to like the serial numbers and stuff. And the paint scratches on like, especially the crack in the plastic on the spaceman.
Oh yeah.
That was like probably my favorite thing that they did with the spaceman one. Just the fact that, it's like, that's exactly what it was. They cracked.
I had that figure.
Exactly.
That was legit, because the first thing to break on it was the little metal on the chin strap. But yeah, there was a lot of a good mixture of live action and animation and stuff like that.
What about that Crazy Capri Sun commercial from the 90s? Remember the kids drinking Capri Sun?
Oh, and all of a sudden they'd like...
It's like a quintessential 90s commercial.
Oh, the Kool-Aid Man commercials.
Hey, there you go.
Across through the wall and live action kids would be like, oh, the Kool-Aid Man.
And the Kia
hamsters. Oh no! Oh no! Oh no!
That was a load supporting ball!
It's like the only Dane Cook joke I've ever laughed at. It's like, thanks Kool-Aid man, now my dad's gonna come home. How am I gonna explain this?
I was going to just point out that it looks kind of primitive by today's standards, but there is, again, the special that aired at the time, Roger Rabbit and the Secrets of Toontown, you can see it. You can see it on YouTube. And they took some bits of animation and, like, redid them so that Roger was, Roger was next to Joanna Cassidy, the host. And so it just sounds like a whole procedure. But that was like on CBS, I believe, right around the time the movie came out. So it would have been late 88. The movie was the summer of 88.
You got the Alvin and the Chipmunks movies recently.
Oh, yep. There you go.
You've got the Kia Hamsters commercials.
Yep.
Yep, Smurfs.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I guess turn this off. The battery's starting to...
He's,
but anyway,
he's
caught
up on TV.
Yeah, Roger Rabbit and the Secrets of
Toontown. That's actually a really good video to watch.
It's taking a while to turn it off, isn't it? There it is.
Okay, you unplugged the audio. On occasion, it was necessary to enlist the aid of a rather unusual stand.
We had these ones together. I'm sorry I yanked your ears.
All the time she yanked my ears.
For actor Bob Hoskins, it was difficult describing to his young children who he was starring with in the movie.
What can you say to a 2-year-old or a 4-year-old? You know, I've been working with his rat.
Now he's dead.
And they, like, you know, look at me as if the old man's on loopy.
Although working with Toons was a first for Hoskins, Who Framed Roger Rabbit was not the first film in which Toons and humans appeared together. The idea of combining cartoon characters and live actors is almost as old as animation itself.
The dinosaur.
Of the earliest animated films, Max Fleischer's Out of the Inkwell series was one of the most popular. Fleischer's Coco the Clown was never content to stay on the artist's pad and made frequent journeys into the real world.
Stuff like back in there.
Likewise, the artist on occasion found himself placed in the world of animation. In 1940, Daffy Duck and Porky Pig made their first appearance in a live-action film. Warner Brothers animator and director Chris Freeling achieved impressive results on an incredibly small budget.
I think the whole thing cost us $600 for live action.
Chris.
And the cartoon itself must have cost $2,000, I guess.
Where have we seen this before? Definitely an homage to that.
Throughout his career, Walt Disney experimented with combining live action and animation. In the Three Caballeros, he expanded upon the techniques that had been used in earlier efforts, while adding the elements of color, music, and dance. Process were refined, more intricate interactions between the cartoon characters and the real world became possible.
Hey, there it is!
Jerry the Mouse succeeded at matching Hollywood legend Gene Kelly step for step.
Jerry's a lot bigger than he should be, isn't he? That's what I was wondering, like, why does it look like he's reaching so far high up? He's supposed to be a mouse.
In 1964, Disney released Mary Poppins. The film went on to become the studio's biggest hit. Although this was the most extensive use of live action and animation to date, the animated sequence ran only a short 10 minutes. By comparison, in Roger Rabbit, Toons and humans share the screen for almost the entire film. And where previous efforts focus on the antics of a few characters, Who Framed Roger Rabbit introduces a spectrum of new Toon personalities, among them Benny the Cat.
But I want to drive!
No, I'll drive! I'm the kid! Out of my way!
Out of my way!
And he's got a mouth and a nose and two eyes and a bad attitude.
I don't have those Brooklyn Dodgers! I need bombs or what?
And then there's Baby Herman.
Prima donna. He knows he's the biggest star in the maroon cartoons. And,
which is a real cigar, by the way.
Chomping, martini, drinking, blue guy.
The ladies' man, huh?
My problem is I got a 50-year-old lust and a 3-year-old dinky.
But of all the supporting characters,
that line was in the
most
original book.
Is Roger's
who
wife.
Said Roger Rabbit?
Together, Roger and Jessica Rabbit make the most unusual husband and wife team in cartoon history.
Come on, Roger, let's go home.
I'll make you a carrot
cake. I'll make you a carrot cake.
Kathleen Turner is the voice of Jessica.
I think that Jessica and Roger Rabbit work so well together because they are such opposites.
Oh, honey bunny.
Oh, love Kathleen.
To me, the funny is the contrast between the reality of her and the wimpishness of this rabbit, you know, like, how are these two attracted to each other?
Seriously, what do you see in that guy?
It makes me
laugh.
What makes the best Toon romances compelling is that in them we can see much of ourselves. There's the initial rush of young love.
Oh, Penelope.
No.
The tender moments of an actual relationship.
How about the moment she gets him back? I think there's literally one cartoon.
And so domestic
bliss. Shut those kids up!
I'm doing the best I can, dear.
As important as romantic couples
are in
cartoons, equally vital is a treacherous lover.
We'll be blasted out of Neverland forever.
I want it through.
Listen well, all of you.
She's my favorite villain.
Before the sound of sex on her 16th birthday, she shall prick her finger on the spindle of a spinning wheel and die.
In the tradition of the past, Who Framed Roger Rabbit introduces the most frightful villain a Toon has ever faced.
Yes.
The maniacal Judge Doom.
Not Christopher Gloves, Mr. Valiant. Doom is the essence of destruction. Doom is evil. Doom is everything that is evil.
Historically, Toons such as Roger have proven to be indestructible. No human could hope to survive even the most routine day in Roger's life. Seemingly, no amount of physical abuse can do a Toon serious harm. But all that has changed, for Judge Doom has found a way to permanently do in a Toon.
Obviously, you can't hurt a Toon by throwing him off a cliff. I mean, we all know that. But since cartoons are basically made of, you know, paint and celluloid and ink, Judge Doom came up with a chemical, and it's been nicknamed the Dip.
With this mixture of turpentine and other deadly chemicals, Doom has a ghastly weapon with which he can literally melt Roger into
a blood. Oh my god, it's Dip!
Paint slick. It's rough and it's not pretty.
Oh my god, it's
Dip! In the tradition of Toon heroes of the past, it's Roger Rabbit to the rescue.
Yes, it's me, my dearest. I loved when Tracy was first. I have to satisfy my sense of moral outrage.
Come down, you
bastard.
You fool.
That's it, dude. We Toons may act idiotic, but we're not stupid.
Okay, wise guy.
between the rabbit with the orange pants, the big floppy ears, the bug teeth, and the plant hopper feet?
Yeah.
I'm seeing.
Bringing the story of Eddie and Roger to the screen required state-of-the-art technology. Two films had to be shot, one in traditional live action using human actors, and the other using strictly cartoon. Oh, hi, Roger. Thanks for joining us. I was just beginning to explain how complicated it was to bring you into the picture.
Complicated?
That's from the movie itself. They just reused the animation.
Roger, you know. May I continue? Mm-hmm. I think you may remember the scene. The one where you got all wet. Oh.
Okay, let's start at the beginning. On the set, we human actors had to perform opposite thin air.
Yeah, it'll look kind of like an Invisible Man movie until we put the cartoons in, and then it'll be horror.
We need that to create the illusion that the cartoon characters had to move things in the physical world.
To accomplish this goal, Zemeckis called on the very special talents of the puppeteer.
It's my task to supervise the 15 puppeteers that we're using, to operate the different props that Roger Rabbit holds and the cartoon characters move.
Leave no stone unturned.
For the effect of a gun being held by the weasel, all it took was a spool of thread and the skilled hand of the puppeteer.
Had to be weighted just right.
To complete the illusion, special effects technicians added a mechanical arm for the more precise movements of the gun. In addition, devices were installed in the sink to simulate the threshings of a frantic, waterlogged Roger. Lastly, Hoskins himself operated the handcuffs with slight movements of his wrist. It was this attention to detail that produced the seamless interaction between the real world and the world of animation.
Step out of line and we'll hang you and your laundry out to dry. Come on, boys. Let's dance.
Shadows on his shirt. How can I ever
repay you?
Superstars, don't ever kiss me again.
But even more crucial than the technology was the ability of Bob Hoskins to relate to his invisible co-stars as though they were actually there.
My job is to make it feel right. You know what I mean? To make it. To actually make a relationship with thin air.
Although imagining the invisible toon characters eventually became second nature to all of us, on occasion it was necessary to enlist the aid of a rather unusual stand-in.
We had these flexi dolls built because when you're pointing the camera at nothing, it's very difficult to know, well, where's the rabbit's, have we cut the rabbit's ears off? I mean, has he got enough ear room?
But more importantly, the actors used the rubber Roger as a reference to help plot out the action and determine sight lines.
Yeah, no lower than that, right.
So I'm looking at his own space.
Just as Hoskins had to struggle with his invisible co-star, so did other actors who appeared opposite tunes. In Mary Poppins, Dick Van Dyke found shooting the penguin dance scene to be a difficult task.
There was a lot of retakes because I would be looking too high, too low, too far back, or my hand would be just a fraction of an inch off.
But I was so thrilled when I saw that sequence.
There was actually a contact, a relationship with those penguins.
Penguins are waiters in the Asian bank club.
In Invitation to the Dance, Gene Kelly's biggest problem was convincing the studio the film would work.
The studio was skeptical. I got my good friend Walt Disney to tell the studio it could be done, and with Walt's help, we did it. Imagination plays everything. It's all in your head, like Columbus on an uncharted sea.
The important role imagination plays in acting with tunes was not lost on Bob Hoskins. Surprisingly, he found inspiration at home while watching his three-year-old daughter at play.
She's got a lot of these pretend characters she plays with. Just to watch her move with someone across the room, she's got that vision, that
person there. Maybe she does it. Maybe we got ghosts. I don't know.
111B, take 3.
Yeah, it's like working with a ghost that only you can see.
But Hoskins sometimes wondered just who was running the show.
Have you spent 5 months dreaming up weasels and rabbits? We know they start to get out of control.
Test of his acting ability, he was quite unprepared for the physical toll the film would take.
Cut. Let's do it again.
Let's
try that again.
Oh,
this is a killer. If this had gone on any longer, I think I'd have been in hospital.
I never told Bob what kind of physical punishment he was going to get the next day, because that would just be too depressing.
Then came Super Mario Brothers, where he literally had to drink to get through.
Got that?
Oh, yeah,
one more.
I can kill him sometimes. I plan to murder him, but one